Okay, what do we mean by dreaming? I mean, do I mean the ordinary stuff we do when we go to bed at night and go into the land of Nod? Or do I mean daydreaming or something like that? Does everything dream? Am I saying that matter dreams? Well, let me take a very materialist point of view here. You're made of matter. And according to the materialist point of view, that matter banging into and producing electrical sparks of energy, which travel between neurons and neurons, interneuronally through chemicals and whatever, is just really dead meat pounding into dead meat. And dead meat is nothing but material. And since you dream, that means that dead meat dreams. And if dead meat dreams, that means matter dreams. In other words, matter dreams. Now, to me, the notion that matter dreams is as much do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do as anything else I've said today. In other words, it is just as bizarre to imagine matter dreaming as it is to imagine a great spirit dreaming all this into existence. So we want to look at just what is meant by all of that. First, let's look at the mechanics of dreaming a little bit. What about time and dreams? Let's look at the time of dreams. Is the time that a dream lasts correspond to the actual time you would have experienced if you had been doing the things that you do when you're dreaming? That's a natural question. Some physiologists who've studied this say yes, they are. But I'm not so sure. Let me tell you about the dream of a French neurophysiologist. This guy lived between 1817 and 1892, and his name was Alfred Moret. Now, Moret was a pioneer in the early to mid-19th century study of dreams and sleep. He was perhaps the first to attempt to analyze dreams by observing himself while dreaming or afterwards. In particular, the effect of external stimulation on dreams. That really occupied a lot of his time. He was particularly interested in the complex procedure by which visual images begin to occur just as one is falling to sleep. We call these today hypnagogic hallucinations. In other words, we think of them as fantasies in some way or another. Well, one evening in 1861, this is a long time ago, Moret had a dream that started people thinking about the relation of external time to his dream time. Moret's dream took him back to around 1793, the time of the French Revolution, and the Reign of Terror that took place in Paris. He reported watching a number of murders. Brought to a trial by a tribunal, he was condemned to the guillotine. Then he was put into a cart along with other criminals and pulled through the streets of Paris, past mobs of jeering people, forced to jostle up and down on the cobblestone streets. He remembers all of that. Arriving at the scaffold, he was forced to mount the stairs leading to the Deadly Lady. That's what she was called in those days. His hands were bound behind his back, and he was laid on his stomach with his head through the stiles and on the block with the dreaded blade some tens of feet above his head. Suddenly, he felt the blade of the guillotine separate his head from his body. Whoa! Woo-wee wow-wow, what a dream! That's not easily forgotten. And Maury awoke from it with a start. He was, to say the least, feeling quite anxious. Then he discovered something quite astonishing. The top of his bed had come loose and fallen, striking him in the neck in just the place that a well-aimed guillotine blade would need to strike to separate that head from that body. Think about that. What are we to make of that dream? And his report of the dream. Did the dream take place? The cobblestone streets, watching the murders, going to trial, riding in the cart, getting mounted on the scaffold to get to the guillotine. Did all that take place in the few maybe 50 to 100 milliseconds, that's thousands of a second, that's less than maybe a tenth of a second, or even let's give it a half a second. Did that all take place during that time when that top of that bed had fallen and hit him on the back of the neck? Was that possible? Perhaps the bed top was loose, and he noticed this just as he went to sleep, and maybe that stimulated the dream. Maybe this had disturbed him, and he had thought that it might fall on him. This might have provoked the dream so that he had a normal dream that coincidentally, that magical word, coincidentally ended just as a loose part fell. If so, it was a remarkable coincidence. Is that the case? Could it have been that way? Well, Sigmund Freud, who was a pretty rational kind of guy, and very much based all of Freudian psychology at the time on the mechanical universal view that Sir Isaac Newton and others before him had provided, when he heard that story, he said that this dream was really the report of a fantasy that Moray had thought about well before the dream and the occasion of the falling bed atop of his head. And that when the falling top of the bed hit him in the head, he recalled that fantasy. In other words, Moray made it all up. He was lying, folks. And he believed that he wasn't lying, and he believed that it was all true, and it was just a fantasy. Well, that could be. I mean, it's always the case that any bizarre story you hear could be a lie and made up. And of course, many skeptical people believe that anything that sounds to be too good to be true is probably too good to be true and should be dismissed as just fantasy. And the only thing real is that which we can prove and approve by experimental facts laid down by objective science. Well, as you might guess, I'm not quite in that camp, although I am very much a scientist, and I believe that you have to be a little skeptical at times. And, you know, if it can be done again, if you can experimentally demonstrate something, then you should. But when it comes to dreams, we're talking about things that pass like ships in the night. You can't quite get them back. So what should we do about that? Ambrose Bierce, in the story of an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge, told of a condemned spy in the American Civil War who was about to be hanged from a rope tied to the middle of a bridge over Owl Creek. As his body is dropping, causing the rope to grow taut, the rope breaks and he falls into the creek. Dragged along by the rushing waters, many hundreds of feet, he escapes his tormentors. He climbs ashore and begins a long adventure where he meets people, eats meals, sleeps in somebody's house, journeys back to his home, and so on. But near the end of his story, he finds that something is wrong in the events that he experiences, and they begin to take on an eerie Twilight Zone quality. Suddenly the rope tightens, choking off his air and killing him. It was all a dream, a dying man's last look at the light of the earth, all taking place in his mind in the few thousands of a second it took his body to reach the end of the rope. Well, what this is illustrating, Bierce's story and Moray's story and many other stories that I'm sure you may have heard, is that dream time, the time we spent in dreams, is not exactly the same as the time we spend in waking life. But it may also be, according to some neurophysiologists, indicating something else. Let me tell you about what they say. What they say is that the dream time is pretty much the same as the ordinary time. If that's the case, then the time that Moray saw in his little glimpses of events while he was dreaming had to have been taking place leading up to the exact moment when the guillotine strikes his neck, is when the top of the bed hits him in the back of the neck. That means it would be all coincidence. Or it could also mean that we have the cart before the horse in a time reverse sense. In other words, what it could mean is that the cause takes place in the future, producing the effect which is the start of the dream in the past, and that cause and effect are time reversed in this dream world. Now, that may seem like a far-fetched idea, but it's not so far-fetched when you start bringing quantum physics into the fold. And it's not so far-fetched when we begin to think that maybe dreams have a more significant role than just hallucinations or fantasies.